Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and now this week in Bridgegate. New Jersey Public Radio's Matt Katz and WNYC's Andrea Bernstein are here to review the progress of the official investigations and their own investigative reporting. Hi, Matt. Hi, Andrea.
Good morning.
Hi, Brian.
Matt, you first. At his inaugural address in 2010, Chris Christie pledged to create a transparent administration. Who out there remembers this?
Today, a new era of accountability and transparency is here. Today, I will sign executive orders that will make our finances, our budgeting, and our processes more transparent for all of our citizens to see. Today, change has arrived.
That was from Governor Christie's first inaugural address, but recently released subpoenaed documents from the Christie administration suggest, or at least raise questions about, the possibility that they may be breaking the state's public records law. Wrangling public information from the Christie administration has proved to be an arduous task, and there are lawsuits, there are long waits, there are heavy redactions. Matt, what's the latest here?
So as a reporter, I've struggled for several years with this administration in terms of getting information, getting documents, getting just basic stuff out of the government that the public is expected to know. And this was brought into stark relief last month when a Bergen County reporter asked for correspondence related to these George Washington Bridge lane closures. And somebody in the governor's office, an unnamed custodian of records, rejected the request. And the reason was there's no such records exist. And this is a common response from the administration. You ask for something, no such records exist. And, you know, what do you do about it? If something doesn't exist, how do you get it? But we found out a month later when the Democrats in the legislature subpoenaed all documents related to this so-called Bridgegate scandal, that they found and they subpoenaed from the Port Authority, and they found an email from the governor's office, from Christie's chief spokesman, Michael Druniak, with Druniak's name on it, from the Druniak's official government account, explicitly dealing with the lane closures, which means that they were either advertently or inadvertently violating the open public records law in New Jersey, which specifically says that if a document exists, if a document is created on the public's dime by a public worker, then it's the public's right to see it. And then this was really the first proof that we've had that they may not be taking open public records in the state and transparency as seriously as the governor promised he would 4 years ago.
So is this a violation of the law, Matt? And if so, who would enforce it and what would the consequences be?
I mean, it's not obviously a criminal violation. So the Bergen Record is suing over this. And that's really what happens every time that there's perceived violations of this law in the Christie administration. The ACLU has filed 7 suits just related to records in this administration, and so far they haven't lost the case. They have one case on appeal that they expect to win, and they've won all the others. So for reporters who don't necessarily have unlimited access to lawyers, and for regular citizens just curious how their government works, there's no recourse. It turns out the only recourse is really to go ahead and sue. There is an agency called the Government Records Council within Christie's government that you can appeal to. But I've never seen them ever rule against the administration. And they're also made up of 4 people, 3 of whom are Christie loyalists, 2 cabinet members and a campaign fundraiser. So the only real recourse to get information that we can tell from this administration is by filing suit. And that's what's happening.
New Jersey Public Radio's Matt Katz, WNYC's Andrea Bernstein. Listeners, any questions about this week in Bridgegate as we try to keep you abreast of the investigation into the actual lane closures? And as you can hear from Matt's story right there, the many capillaries that are flowing out of that original investigation now as other things get fleshed into public view. Hoboken, Jersey City, the open records law. So if there's anything you want to ask about as we update you on some of the latest, 212-433-WNYC-433-9692, or tweet at Brian Lehrer or post to WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. Andrew, you've been reporting this week on potential conflicts of interest that the chair of the Port Authority, David Sampson, appointed by the governor, may have, and he was one of the people whose names were on the Bridgegate emails. What's the main conflict that the Port Authority's Board of Commissioners is looking into?
Well, what I've been told is that the Port Authority's Board of Commissioners is going to look into everything. So Bridgegate, Rockefeller Group, all the facts as they emerge, this Hoboken the Hoboken situation for sure with the Rockefeller Group. And just to review the facts in that case, it's not just that Sampson was close to the governor. Sampson was involved in Bridgegate, and Sampson was a lobbyist. I mean, that sort of happens in government. The added wrinkle is that the Port Authority funded a study which concluded that the best piece of land to develop was the piece of land owned by Sampson's client. So you have a question about whether he's using his official capacities and resources that are available to him as a public official to benefit a private client. Similarly, he voted for a $256 million upgrade of the PATH station in Harrison. Now, let me just say that this is a project that all kinds of people praise. Developers praise it, town officials praise it, planners praise it because it encourages what they see as good development, which is dense multifamily housing right near transit and, walkable situations, parks, but mostly not suburban sprawl, which, as we know, has been such a terrible blight in parts of New Jersey. So it's not the PATH station itself that people are objecting to. It's that two private clients of Sampson's owned land near the PATH station, and he did not recuse himself from that vote. So what happens is when you own land near a place where the government is infusing hundreds of millions of dollars, that land goes up in value. So that means that his private clients, again, stand to potentially gain from a public action that he took.
And if people have been listening to our news programs, they've heard you lay out these connections in great detail during this week. Has Sampson himself responded to any of this?
Sampson has not responded, although he did hire a crisis management public relations firm this week. And interestingly, that firm, Evergreen PR, has on its homepage a Wall Street Journal article in which it's talking about how its principal is going to Hollywood to help them with damage control because she has so much experience with scandal from New Jersey, which is sort of a funny side irony. But one of the sort of additional troubling things that happened this week is when I called the Port Authority and I said, what is your code of ethics? What procedures will you follow to investigate this? They referred me to Sampson's private public relations firm. And, you know, this sort of circles right back around to what Matt was saying. The tape that you started with of Chris Christie, I have an identical clip, almost identical clip of David Sampson saying about the Port Authority. This is going to be a new era of transparency. So what we can find on the Port Authority website now are employees' salaries, overtime information. What we cannot find are the disclosures that the ethics code says they're supposed to file showing what their possible private conflicts of interest could be.
And maybe a bigger conversation, maybe for another time, is government in general in the United States just becoming more closed to public information? We could say the same thing about President Obama. Play a clip from his 2009 inaugural address in which he said he was going to run the most transparent administration ever in Washington. And now you have Jill Abramson, the executive editor of the New York Times the other day, saying no, in her long experience, this is actually the most secretive administration that the Times has ever covered.
Well, I think that there are certainly different levels of that. I think on the sort of more basic sort of level of land development, and you sort of remember like the surplus and recovery.gov. And, you know, there was quite a bit of information that was released. I mean, it wasn't everything we wanted to know. When you start talking about the NSA, the spying scandals, the phone records, you certainly get into truly a different realm of secrecy than I think we've seen before.
All right. Here's an open records question, I think, from Dimitri in Plainfield. Dimitri, you're on WNYC. Hi there.
I would like to encourage, first of all, good morning, Brian, long-time listener.
Thank you.
I would like to encourage your reporters to look into Morris County's. Morris County has a habit of not giving any public information. So I would like to report reporters jump on the Morris County's, all the municipalities.
Go ahead.
Who's picking up the bid record for construction? They refuse to give it a bidder list. That's the biggest joke in the world. So that's what I want to say about Morris County.
Dimitri, thank you very much. Okay, Matt, you have your next assignment.
I'm on it.
Matt,
we're frustrated with getting information from the state, but at a local level, it can sometimes get even more frustrating because often, I mean, Morris County is one party control for the most part, and often in those places when there's maybe few less public attention, less press coverage, it's almost impossible to get some pieces of information. And, our frustrations are on the state level sometimes dwarf what people are dealing with in their local towns and counties. And there's so much government and there's such weak enforcement mechanisms to hold government officials accountable for the records and the information that they release that it's incredibly frustrating. I mean, what we've been dealing with in the last few weeks is also, and that's sort of taken a back seat to some of the other scandals, but Sandy, the lack of the number of lawsuits now related to Sandy just to get information is fascinating. I mean, we found out last week that the governor fired the biggest Sandy contractor for dealing with getting people back in their homes. They didn't tell anybody. It went on for 6 weeks earlier. They'd fired them in December. 6 weeks later, we found out about it. They gave them a $10.5 million settlement. I've been calling all week. I can't get a copy of the settlement in terms of the terms of why they gave $10.5 million. They will refuse to tell me why they fired this company that was responsible for distributing $800 million in federal tax dollars. And they refuse to tell me what company has taken it over. I mean, this is not – I'm not looking for, like, private emails between the governor and the chief of staff where they may be deliberating policy and, you know, talking smack on certain Democrats. I'm looking for, like, real basic stuff.
Do they even give you an excuse, Matt?
No, just a flimsy cover
of a reason for why they wouldn't tell you who the state has hired to do Sandy cleanup?
No, they just sent a statement saying that they were transitioning to a new phase of Sandy recovery, ignoring the fact that they cut this contract out 2 years before it was supposed to expire. I mean, the commissioner of community affairs, Richard Constable, actually testified before the legislature a couple of weeks ago, and he was asked about this particular company, HGI, because they had been criticized for losing people's paperwork and other poor performance. And he said, well, we're working through the problem, something vague like that. He was given an opportunity to say, oh, we actually fired them and we're doing this now. But he didn't tell them.
Even though they had already been fired at the time that question was asked.
That's correct.
All right.
That's
Nick in Cliffside Park has a Samson question, I think. Hi, Nick. You're on WNYC.
Yeah, it goes beyond Samson. In the case of, say, Blagojevich in Illinois, it was one bad man doing one bad thing, relatively simple. What we're looking at here is systemic, I'll say it, systemic organized corruption, i.e. organized crime. I don't think anything less than the application of the RICO statutes from the federal level is going to solve this, because you reporters are running into stonewalls. They're stonewalling at every level, and Christie and the gang have control of a lot of judges, a lot of administrators. It's all their own people. They're all out to protect their butts, because they're probably all in some way, shape, or form guilty, either civilly or criminally or ethically. And it's just they're just hoping this will all blow over. They can keep it contained, and eventually it gets out of the spotlight, and the public forgets. And do you think they're really going to get away with this? That this is all just going to blow over?
Well, that's a very global characterization of what's going on. And, Andrea, specific investigations have to take place and specific pieces of wrongdoing have to be found before anybody's prosecuted under RICO statutes or anything like that.
Right. But, and I will say that there's a qualitative difference to what is going on now, which is that we have legislators, lawmakers in New Jersey using subpoena power. There is a federal prosecution, a federal investigation of some of these things. So people with more tools than we have available to us as reporters are on this now. And, you know, a lot of what we try to do as reporters is get things out in the public so that law enforcement officials and others with actual authority and power can go in and investigate. I mean, I think that
I don't think they're going to get away with much from this point.
Right. I mean,
because
what is, right.
So many news organizations are, or at least a handful, including ours, are seriously on it. And the opposition legislators, the Democrats in the legislature, are seriously on it. And the U.S. attorney presumably is seriously on it. Maybe nobody would have gotten their minds around it before Bridgegate came up with the lane closures because they wouldn't have wanted to get involved and Christie's popular and whatever. But now I think this is going to be run to ground.
I think that, you know, there's reason for optimism. I mean, one of the things that we learned in Bridgegate was that the press office of the Port Authority, their standard response was, we are not responding. And that was in many of the emails. So-and-so reporter asked such-and-such, we are not responding unless directed otherwise. But we learned that because somebody exercised a subpoena. So now we understand something that we didn't understand before. Also, I should mention that the Port Authority press office is controlled by the New Jersey commissioners. So it's in some ways a kind of branch of the Christie administration, therefore not a surprise that they're acting in a similar way in terms of public information. I mean, I also think what is really extraordinary about this is the ways in which so much of the private business of David Sampson, the business of the Christie administration, the Sandy Aid, and the business of the Port Authority have become intertwined and in some cases, as we've learned, indistinguishable in people's minds. And that, I think, is the sort of big, startling takeaway about how the New Jersey government was working.
Right. And while Sampson still has his job as Christie's head of the Port Authority, it's just come out, I think this is the latest development in all of this today, that the Rockefeller Group fired his law firm, Wolf and Sampson, and the connection, as you were describing before, was that it was Sampson's law firm that was representing the Rockefeller Group, which is the company that wants to develop that site in Hoboken
right.
that supposedly the mayor of Hoboken threatened with Sandy Aid over. So I guess Rockefeller Group, which probably only cares about being able to develop its property, has decided that Sampson is now a liability
right.
rather than a political asset,
right.
and they offed him yesterday.
Right. I mean, and it's of a piece with the story that I have today about the Port Authority Board looking into Sampson, because the Port Authority Board has in general sort of been a kind of a brohood. I mean, you know, people are not out to ice each other. They're out to just sort of keep it moving along. So the fact that there's even a movement to examine this is a real kind of sea change. And it suggests that Sampson, people are beginning to feel that he may be a liability. And I think one of the political problems for Christie that Matt has been reporting on is that when he fired Bridget Ann Kelly and he fired Bill Stepien, he said, I spoke to the general, called general because he was attorney general of the state of New Jersey. I spoke to the general for 2 hours, and
Sampson,
I'm convinced he wasn't involved in any of this. And he embraced him at that moment when his name had already emerged in the emails, potentially involved in planning. We don't exactly know. That famous note, Sampson will retaliate. We do know his response was to be upset about the leak rather than, it would appear, the potential law breaking and criminality itself. So that is a box for Christie that he has yet to figure out how to get out of.
So that's Bridgegate. That's This Week in Bridgegate with Andrew Bernstein and Matt Katz. Matt, what can we look for next week in Bridgegate?
Subpoenas are due. So both the Democratic-controlled Legislative Committee, their subpoenas are due on Monday, and then a couple days after that, the U.S. Attorney subpoenas are due. Now, that doesn't mean we're going to all of a sudden get a whole bunch of new emails and information. They'll likely, both entities will likely keep them quiet for at least some period of time. But it will be interesting to see if everybody cooperates, if anybody asks for an extension, and what the Democrats who control the legislative committee have to say about the response they're getting. And then maybe we'll see more subpoenas, or maybe some subpoenas for some of these folks like David Sampson to come in and testify. That would certainly be interesting.
New Jersey Public Radio's Matt Katz, WNYC's Andrea Bernstein. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
And
thanks,
listeners,
Brian.
Keep posting your questions and comments to WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show or tweet at Brian Lehrer. Still to come after the news, two State of the Union explainers. What did President Obama mean when he proposed equal pay for equal work? Isn't that already the law? And what's this new retirement plan he announced? Should you set up a MyRA?